Chapter 19. The Protocols of the Elders of Zion. I have said previously that the Jews wrote 5 major books that have been of overwhelming importance in their program for the destruction of the white race. The first 2 were the Old Testament and the New Testament. The 3rd was the Talmud. The 4th is the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. The protocols are undoubtedly the most deadly, the most vicious, the most diabolic program for the subjugation and destruction of mankind that was ever conceived by the collective depraved minds of man. They constitute the secret program of the inner circle of the powerful Jewish insiders that rule the world. It is thought that this circle, these powerful insiders, are composed of approximately 300 men, all Jews, all of whom know each other, but are unknown to the rest of the world. They are also unknown to the Jewish following, whose support they demand, and whose support they enjoy. These elders, the supreme nerve center of power of the Jewish dictatorship, have for centuries usurped unto themselves the supreme power of the world. They are also the governing body of the Kehillah and the Jewish race. The program that is set forth in the protocols is a very concentrated program, and it defies summarization, because it is in itself a summarization of the hidden programs that the Jews have interlaced in the complex and shifting volumes of the Talmud. Its program is also the distilled concentrated poison set forth in Karl Marx's Das Kapital and Communist Manifesto. It is also an extension of the philosophy set forth in the Old Testament and the New Testament of the Jewish Bible. However, whereas the Old Testament is for the consumption for the Jewish membership at large, and the New Testament especially designed to confuse and confound the Gentiles, the protocols are a secret compilation. In no event were they ever to be seen by the eyes of the Gentiles. Not even was the Jewish membership at large ever to know the exact details of what the leadership had in mind. The fact that the protocols are now available to the Gentiles, and to the white race in particular, is one of the great accidents of history. They were first published by Professor Sergei Nilus, who was a priest in the Orthodox Church in Russia. He published the first Russian-language edition in 1905. In his introduction, he says that a manuscript had been handed to him about 4 years earlier by a friend, who vouched that it was a true translation of an original document stolen by a woman from one of the most influential and highly initiated leaders of Freemasonry at the end of a meeting of the initiated in France, that nest of Jewish Masonic conspiracy. Professor Nihlus added that the protocols are not exactly minutes of meetings, but a report, with a part apparently missing, made by some powerful person inside the Jewish conspiracy. The protocols were published in book form by Sergei Nihlus in Russia in 1905. A copy of this is in the British Museum, bearing the date of its inception, August the 10th, 1906. The publication of this book was a very serious threat to the Jewish conspiracy, and Adolf Hitler says that whenever this book becomes the common property of a nation, the Jewish threat can pretty well be deemed as broken. This goes to show just how important this document is. The Jews realized this, and all copies that were known to exist in Russia in the Kerensky regime just after the revolution were destroyed, and under his successors, the possession of a copy of the protocols by anyone in the Soviet Union was deemed a crime to ensure the owner being shot on sight. It is highly recommended that every white man and woman study this ferocious and deadly document for themselves, and convince themselves of its genuineness, and get a better understanding of the Jewish conspiracy. Naturally, the Jews keep screaming again and again that they are forgeries, but what they are forgeries of, they do not say, since a forgery implies that there is a genuine article to be found. In any case, the Jewish program of subversion and conquest of the world has followed this plan so faithfully that the events of history speak for themselves. They are the best proof that the protocols are genuine. Mr. Henry Ford, in an interview published in the New York World, February 17, 1921, put the case for Nihilus tersely and convincingly thus: "The only statement I care to make about the protocols is that they fit in with what is going on. They are 16 years old, and they have fitted the world situation up to this time. They fit it now." Since Mr. Henry Ford made that statement, more than 50 years have gone by. Today we can see with our own eyes the world picture that has unfolded in the meantime. We can see more precisely the confirmation of the program contained in the protocols. Practically all of the world is now under Jewish control, and so much more of the deadly program has been unraveled before our eyes that a person has to be either a Jewish agent or a complete idiot to deny the authenticity of the protocols of the Elders of Zion. Meanwhile, the Jews consistently keep denying that the protocols are genuine. In fact, they have even set up a committee in the Senate to investigate them and issue a report that they were forged. Naturally, this was done under the leadership of such Jewish senators as Senator Javits and others, with a goodly support of pro-Jewish lackeys. In any case, the claim of the Jews that the protocols are forgeries, and the fact that the Jews are the world's greatest liars and masters of deceit, it is the best proof of their genuineness. Strangely, the Jews never attempt to answer the facts correspondent to the threats which the protocols contain. And indeed, the correlation between the prophecy of the protocols and the fulfillment that has already been brought about is just too obvious to be argued away. This the Jews know only too well, and therefore they never argue about the material contained in the protocols itself, and the obvious unraveling of the conspiracy before our eyes. In any case, the diabolical plan spelt out in the protocols of the Elders of Zion is not new to Jewish history. They revealed the concerted plan of action of the Jewish nation that has developed through the ages, and edited by the Elders themselves up to that date. According to the records of the secret Jewish Zionism, King Solomon and other Jewish learned men in 929 BC already had thought out a scheme in theory for a peaceful conquest of the whole universe of Zion. As history developed, this scheme was worked out in detail and completed by men who were subsequently initiated into this program. These learned men decided, by any means whatsoever, to conquer the world for Zion with the slyness of the symbolic snake, whose head was to represent those who have been initiated into the plans of the Jewish administration, and the body of the snake to represent the Jewish people. The administration was always to be kept secret, even from the Jewish nation itself. As this snake penetrated into the hearts of the nations it encountered, it undermined and devoured all the non-Jewish power of these states. It is foretold that the snake has still to finish its work, strictly adhering to the designed plan until the course which it has to run is closed by the return of its head Zion, and until, by this means, the snake has completed its round of Europe, it will then encompass the whole world. This it is to accomplish by using every means possible, subduing countries by economic conquest, by propaganda, by cunning, by trickery, by deceit, by war, by finance, by force, or by any necessary means whatsoever. Anyone studying the Talmud will find embedded in much chaff and other long-winded diatribe the essence of the program described in the protocols. To show that the diabolical conspiracy embodied in the protocols is not new, we have the same principles and morality of the latter-day protocols, which are rarely as old as the tribe itself, set forth in the 15th century program, which was printed in the French journal, financed by the Rothschilds, and published in 1889. 400 years earlier, on January the 13th, 1489, Kimor, Jewish rabbi of Arles in Provence, France, wrote to the Grand Sanhedrin, which then had its seat in Constantinople, for advice, as the peoples of Arles were threatening the synagogues. What should the Jews do? This was the reply. Dear beloved brethren in Moses, we have received your letter in which you tell us of the anxieties and the misfortunes which you are enduring. We are pierced by a great pain to hear it as yourselves. The advice of the great satraps and rabbis is the following. As for what you say, that the king of France obliges you to become Christians, do it, since you cannot do otherwise. But let the law of Moses be kept in your hearts. As for what you say about the command to despoil you of your goods, the law was that on becoming converted, Jews gave up their possessions. Make your sons merchants, that little by little they may despoil the Christians of theirs. As for what you say about their making attempts on your lives, make your sons doctors and apothecaries, that they may take away Christian lives. As for what you say of their destroying your synagogues, make your sons canons and clerics in order that they may destroy their churches. As for the many other vexations you complain of, arrange that your sons become advocates and lawyers, and see that they always mix themselves up with the affairs of state, in order that by putting Christians under your yoke, you may dominate the world and be avenged on them. Do not swerve from this order that we give you, because you will find by experience that, humiliated as you are, you will reach the actuality of power. Signed, V.S.S.B.F.F., Prince of the Jews, 21st Kaslu, November 1489. In the year 1844, just before the Jewish revolutions of 1848 swept most of Europe, Benjamin Disraeli, whose real name was Israel, and who was a damned or baptized Jew, published his novel Coningsby, in which he revealed the following. The world is governed by very different personages from what is imagined by those who are not behind the scenes. He even went on to show that all these personages were Jews. A map of the course of the symbolic snake is shown as follows. Its first stage in Europe was in 429 BC in Greece, where at the time of Pericles, the snake first started eating into the power of that unfortunate country. The second stage was in Rome, at approximately the time of Julius Caesar. It may come as a surprise to many readers that Julius Caesar, who has probably received more fame and publicity than any other Roman, was a valuable agent of the Jews. It was for this reason that he was murdered by a small group of patriotic Romans who risked their lives in order to try to avert the destruction of the Roman Republic. The Jews wept and cried around the body of Julius Caesar, as they always do when one of their own agents has been killed. The third stage takes place in Madrid in the time of Charles V in 1552, the fourth in Paris in 1790 at the time of Louis XVI and the French Revolution. The fifth movement of the symbolic snake is designated in London in 1814 onwards, after the downfall of Napoleon. The next and sixth stage, the symbolic snake moves on to Berlin in 1871, after the Franco-Prussian War. The seventh stage takes place in St. Petersburg, over which is drawn the head of the snake under the date 1881. All these states, which the snake has traversed, have had their foundations and their constitutions shaken to the roots. There are 24 protocols altogether, and each one of them is loaded with deadly concentrated poison. The term goyim is used throughout, and it is a Jewish term for Gentiles or non-Jews. It is a derogatory term that is synonymous with the word cattle. In other words, they view the Gentiles, including the white race, as so many cattle to be maneuvered, herded about, and finally slaughtered or enslaved for the benefit of the Jews. As stated previously, a part of the protocols is deemed to be missing. I strongly suspect that the matter dealing with the tremendously powerful part the Judeo-Christian hoax has played in subjugating the goyim is what is missing. Since Professor Nihlus was also a priest, he himself might have deleted or destroyed this part, feeling it was harmful to his church. In any case, the protocols, as we have them, are incomplete. Nevertheless, in their 70 short pages, they contain so much that is basic in the Jewish program that it is imperative for us to study them. They are vital for our understanding of the Jewish thinking and their tactics. In the next chapter, I am therefore reviewing the text of the 24 protocols in abridged form.